Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms both in the system and within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Webster Tarpley. Webster Griffin Tarpley has just come out with a new book called 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Made in USA. He's also the author of George Bush, the Unauthorized Biography, which he wrote in 1992 with Anton Chetkin. Welcome, Webster. How many people read this unauthorized biography where you connect up the George Bush with the Nazis, basically, is my understanding?
Yes, it was a printed book that came out in the summer of 1992, and it featured the connections of Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the current tenant of the White House, or father of Bush Sr., with a guy called Thyssen, and therefore with Hitler, the Nazi Party, Nazi finance, the German industrial complex, military-industrial complex. So that was 25,000 print copies went out in the summer of 1992 before the election, and it has been on the Internet since October 1996. It remains there free for anybody to download anytime they want to, and it's been downloaded, as far as I can see, millions of times, and it has been cited widely all over the world. It's a kind of an Internet legend. So that would be one. And the new book that I have is 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Made in USA. Both of these are available from progressivepress.com. There's a new edition of the unauthorized biography of George Bush, and then what just came off the presses now in the past couple of days, 9/11 Synthetic Terrorism, which is my critique of the 9/11 myth.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about that, and I will say that this unauthorized biography of George Bush is many, many pages, and it must be much nicer to read the book than on the Internet,
easier
although it's all good.
Easier on the eyes in the printed version, progressivepress.com.
Okay, well, let's talk about your new book, Webster Tarpley. You're here in the San Francisco Bay Area because we were just showing Barry Zwicker's film last night, Great Conspiracy, the 9/11 news special you never saw, and you are one of the people speaking along with that film. It's really good to have you here and be able to interview you. And I know that you have a particular take on what happened in 9/11. In this interview, we're going to be talking about what that is, what the questions are about the secret government. We're going to be talking about this whole geopolitical situation on the planet today. So just start wherever you'd like.
Well, maybe just to say, with a number of books already out about 9/11, why this one of mine, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, what I try to do, I think, is rather different from anything that has existed so far, which is to try to say 9/11 is part of a tradition. 9/11 is coherent with the secret intelligence agency methods used by U.S. British intelligence in particular for many, many decades. I'm trying to combat 9/11 as a myth. In other words, it's a prison house of the human mind. It's a monstrous artificial fabrication. I try to show how the myth was concocted by Bush, by Colin Powell, by Richard Clark in particular, who for some reason some people think is some kind of a hero of 9/11. I would classify him as one of the main villains, one of the main operatives in this entire thing. And I would lay the entire action at the feet of the U.S. invisible government. In other words, that's why it says made in USA. There's no good trying to blame this on Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, or even the Mossad, because the main center of these activities can only be deep inside the U.S. federal government, inside the Defense Department, the CIA, the White House, NSA, NSC, and so forth. People may remember during Iran-Contra, it was pretty much common knowledge that there was entity inside what you saw as a legal government, right? Sometimes called the invisible government, the parallel government, the shadow government, the secret team. This was what carried out gun running and drug running with Oliver North and the rest of it.
I just want to say that probably a lot of people listening are on the same page as you, Webster Tarpley, in many ways, and probably some people never even heard of such an idea that the tragedies of 9/11 were an inside job. So I just want to take a minute for everybody to take a breath and let in that that is what you're saying. You're not the only person saying that. And there's other interviews that I've done, including with you, that say that. But I know it's just bowls over some people, and some people are probably saying, get on with it. So let's get on with it.
So what I'm saying is that the only agency in the world that had the technical, physical capability to bring this about would have to be a faction inside the U.S. government. It doesn't have to be everybody. It's enough to have several hundred top-level bureaucrats who pretty much know the outlines of what's going to happen, and then to have several hundred more who may know part of what's going to happen. If you look at an agency that could carry out the assassination of President Kennedy, could carry out the Gulf of Tonkin incident, start the Vietnam War, bring the crack cocaine epidemic to the streets of America with Iran-Contra, bait the Soviets with the U-2 affair, they've been around for many decades, they are going to not really think twice or bat an eye before killing 3,000 people. I mean, think of crack cocaine. It's killed far more.
And, of course, there is evidence about these things, but not everybody knows it because it's not necessarily in the corporate media, and if it is, it gets a short life.
Right. And, of course, the official inquiries have all been fantastic, right? They're all exercises in begging the question. The Kane-Hamilton Commission, the Senate investigation, the House investigation, the FEMA investigation, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, all of these beg the question in the sense that they start by saying, Al-Qaeda did it, Osama bin Laden, Atta, 19 hijackers, the laptop in the cave in Afghanistan. All a fantastic myth because they're not able to produce the effects you see. One of my points in the book is to offer you a conceptual scheme of how these things are done. And I try to divide it into three main categories. What you read about in the press are patsies, people like bin Laden, Atta. These are very often assets of the U.S. intelligence, of the CIA, people like this. Al-Qaeda in particular, if you want to call it something, call it the CIA Arab Legion. It was created by the CIA. It was used over the years to attack countries like Libya or Bosnia or you name it that were on the U.S. hit list, Russia through Chechnya, things like this. We have a lot of material about how these patsies operate. The problem with the patsies is, like Lee Harvey Oswald, they're not able to carry out the physical effects that you see. You remember that Lee Harvey Oswald is supposed to have gotten off these three shots, I guess, in the official version. The problem is he couldn't have done it. There's no way that he could have done it. Then you look at these 9/11 patsies, people like Atta. Could he have flown the planes? Not in a million years. The guy's a psychotic. He's a cat torturer, a cocaine addict, a degenerate in every sense of the word, and his people around him equally so. They simply could not have climbed into the cockpit and flown these planes into the buildings.
And my understanding is even if they were average pilots, it takes a lot more than an average pilot to have done any of these things.
Precisely. And one of the things I've done in my book is go to the European literature. In other words, the controlled corporate media in the U.S. are one thing. European media, equally corporate and equally controlled, I'm sure, but different in the sense that they have a somewhat more skeptical take on these things. And you find that there are any number of pilots, I'll just name one of them, Niki Lauda, famous Formula One driver who then founded his own airline, who is very skeptical about the idea that such amateurs with light planes and Cessnas and things like this could ever do what is attributed to them. Then that's not even the biggest difficulty. The biggest difficulty is flying a plane into the World Trade Center will not bring it down. There is no way that aviation fuel can burn in such a way as to destroy a large, modern, fireproof skyscraper. It just can't be done. And then we even have the reductio ad absurdum of the whole thing, which is World Trade Center Building 7, which is certainly a skyscraper. It's about 50 stories tall. Would have been the biggest building in most cities on the planet. That came down at 5:30 in the afternoon with no plane, no large fire, no nothing, but simply down after the owner of this complex, Silverstein, said that he had decided to pull it, meaning to, in effect, to engage in controlled demolition. So the patsy world is what you're shown, but this cannot be the main explanation. Now, I also point out that there are moles operating. In other words, that this invisible government network primarily exists as a bunch of traitors, if you like, people inside the federal bureaucracy who are not loyal to the Constitution or the official chain of command, but rather march to the beat of a different drummer, which is a private network, ultimately controlled by financiers, which is really an insurrection. In other words, it's a putsch, it's a coup. It's an attempt to completely change foreign policy, to impose a police state on the home front, and they've succeeded in a large part of that. So we talk about some of the moles, for example, people sitting in the FBI, Dave Frasca, a good example, he getting reports from Minneapolis and Phoenix about patsies who are preparing to do different things, taking courses and flight training, and he successfully blocks any activity on that.
What do you mean he blocks any activity?
Well, in other words, if you're the head of the FBI's Islamic fundamentalist terrorist division, and you get a report from Minneapolis, from Colleen Rowley, that there are a couple of characters running around who are interested in airplanes and getting trained, and there are indications that a terrorist attack is being prepared. And then you get another one from Phoenix, Arizona, where you've got the same thing going on with the same circles. At that point, you've got to get some search warrants, send out police, roll up a patsy network. And of course, the goal of the mole is to make sure that the patsy network is not rolled up. Not because the patsies are going to carry it out, but because the patsies have got to be free and running around so that they can be arrested and scapegoated after the main event has taken place. The other thing is the network that you don't hear about and don't see. Who does have the physical technical ability to bring down buildings, to fly airplanes into the towers and things like this? And I call them the professionals, the professional killers, right? The ice-cold technocrats of death. These are people who don't try to get noticed. They're not ideological fanatics in the sense that they shoot their mouths off, although they may be fanatics in their own quiet way. They seek to get out of town as soon as this has happened. These are the people, for example, who know enough about controlled demolition to bring down buildings, including the Twin Towers, where it looks like some kind of advanced form of controlled demolition is actually at work, and who perhaps have these ground control, remote control abilities to fly airplanes, overriding the controls in the cockpit, simply taking over from the ground and flying them into a building. It's a scenario that's discussed in a television pilot called The Lone Gunman, which appeared somewhat before these actions, which I talk about a little bit in the book. So if you want to understand terrorism, you got to realize that it takes patsies, moles, it takes professional killers, and it takes a command center, which cannot be inside the U.S. federal government. It's most likely, it's some people have said Dick Cheney ran it all from his office. I think this is fantastic. It's got to be most likely a private military firm, maybe a public relations firm, someplace that's outside of government surveillance, someplace where they can do this in an informal way without being subjected to supervision or surveillance.
Right. Okay, well, I just wanted to say a couple of things. One is that if people are wanting, and because you can't say everything in a half an hour, and people try as you will, but I know that if you want more information about the buildings being exploded, you can go to Jim Hoffman's website, WTC7.net, or just Google Jim Hoffman. He lives in Berkeley here, and he did a lot of work on it. That's why I know him.
I cite him, although I have to say that he's recently, he's sort of flip-flopped last October. He said that up until then, he had maintained, which I think is the obvious fact, that no commercial airliner ever hit the Pentagon. He's now flipped over on that and said he thinks that a commercial airliner did hit the Pentagon. So let me recommend progressivepress.com and get this book, because this is a guide that will take you through the masses of empirical material. In other words, a lot of websites have, mountains, avalanches of facts. But there's got to be something more. There's got to be a conceptual framework to put this stuff together. And I think that's where the moles, the patsies, the professional killers, the command center, and the media come together. And that's what I try to offer in my book, a way to think about all of these facts.
Well, that's great. I just wanted to let people know, because I know that people will often say, well, how do you know that? But we don't have enough time to discuss how we know it. And the other thing I wanted to say was, for me personally, I thought something was fishy really early on. And one of the reasons was, is that, oh, well, if they know who did, in no time at all, a few hours they had, these are the people that committed this crime. Well, if they knew that, why didn't they stop them? So the way you describe patsies, of course, that makes perfect sense.
My whole first chapter is devoted to the genesis of the myth. How do you think you know this stuff? How do you think you know Atta, Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, the 19? Well, the short answer to that is Bush told you And if you look at Bush's track record, aren't we dealing here with the biggest liar of the century, an inveterate faker, liar, charlatan, an expert in duplicity? More technically, the person who fabricates the myth is this Richard Clark. Remember him. He should get the Academy Award for his appearance at the 9/11 hearings about a year ago when he apparently charmed the 9/11 families. He's the guy who walked into the White House before 9 a.m. on the morning of September 11th saying, this is Al-Qaeda, this is bin Laden, kept repeating that all through the day, had contacts at CNN, had contacts in the other networks, and essentially got that line out. And that's the beginning of the entire thing. And notice that he did it knowing absolutely nothing about what had happened, with absolutely no empirical informational basis. He simply walked in and said, this is Al-Qaeda. Very, very suspicious.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that. So, Webster Tarpley, I'm going to repeat your latest book here, 9/11, Synthetic Terror Made in USA. And the other one that's been on the internet, but now you could get in book form as well, is George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography by U. Webster Griffin Tarpley and Anton Chaykin. And you can get those through Progressive Press.
It's progressivepress.com. If you want to send an email, send it to info@progressivepress.com. But just the easiest is go to the website, Progressive Press, all one word, all lowercase, progressivepress.com. It's out here in California, and you can get it. It'll be on Amazon also quite soon.
And you live in Washington, D.C. area.
Correct.
Well, I am wondering if we should buzz right on here to what's going on now in terms of the geopolitical situation and what you see happening next, because we need to expose 9/11, that's for sure. I mean, expose the lies, and maybe someday we'll get to the truth, but there's no way we can know exactly what that is. But we can sure know, and I always say, too, well, even if you don't accept all this stuff, like, you know, whether the plane went into the Pentagon or not, I mean, there's so many, many reasons to think that the official story isn't a lie, that if you just accept two or three of them, that's enough to know it's a cover-up. And it's not incumbent upon us to know all the answers to these things because we don't have the information. But we do know what's been going on since, for sure, for some of it. And you talk about a shadow, a secret government,
right.
So I'd like to hear more about that.
Right. And I think that's the key to the whole thing. Some people have come forward now and said 9/11 is dead as an issue. 9/11 will never be dead as an issue until the secret government, the invisible government, has been eradicated and prevented from infesting all of these powerful organs of government. So I think it's important to keep 9/11 alive, most emphatically, because this is one of the main scandals of the first Bush administration. But now we've got other scandals that are essentially showing us what it means to live under more and more blatant forms of invisible government rule. Most obvious is the coup d'etat of November 2004 now, the stolen election, the absolute fabrication of the election results, the stuffing of the ballot boxes, the redshift fraud, where the divergence between the exit polls and the actual vote totals were always in favor of Bush by 3 to 5%, as has been brought out by various people looking at Ohio, but also Florida and indeed other states. And there was a complete pattern fraud across the board. Now, that's one thing. The overarching reality is that we are now living through the breakdown crisis of the dollar-based imperialist system. This is the British-U.S. world domination mediated through the U.S. dollar, which is now collapsing. That's, I think, fundamental. And you've also got this clique of neocon madmen in the White House now, a lot of them secret government activists from the word go. This Negroponte has just been put in, Elliot Abrams in the White House, Rumsfeld, obvious, many other cases. Right, some of them are on the cover of the book as moles. What they're attempting to do is not only save the dollar system, but they're also attempting to secure world domination. We have to remember, what's the point of 9/11? The goal of 9/11 is to unleash the Samuel Huntington War of Civilizations. Who are the targets? The Arab and Islamic world is targeted because they have population growth. They pose a demographic challenge to this decrepit Anglo-American system. The Chinese are targeted because they have elevated levels of economic growth, 10, 12, 15% a year, that the Anglo-Americans feel they have no way of matching. although it would be possible if you could get rid of these financiers. And the third target is always Russia, as Wolfowitz stressed in his 1992 Wolfowitz Doctrine report. Russia will always be on the hit list because they retain the thermonuclear capability to wipe out the whole Anglo-American system. So what they're doing is, on the one side, my information right now is that Iran and perhaps also Russia are now on the verge of saying, we don't want to take dollars anymore in payment for our oil. One of the pillars of this entire system since the Second World War has been that the posted price of oil has been in dollars. Junking that system in favor of the euro would be logical for Russia in particular. Why shouldn't Russia get paid in euros for oil deliveries directly to the European Union? And there even the notion that Iran is in the process of not only of making the transition to euro posted prices, but also to setting up a kind of commodity exchange, euro denominated, where they would buy and sell oil, which would then be open to other countries. It would be an alternative to the New York COMEX and the London spot market in oil. These things would essentially cause central banks to shift their resources out of the dollar into the euro, and it would bring down the dollar system. Now remember, the United States economy is practically non-existent. What remains is a heroin addict who's got to have a fix of about $700 billion a year of unpaid merchandise. Our industrial workers have now gone below 10 million. We have fewer than 10 million factory workers left producing anything. So you look at this economy and you have to say it's absolutely parasitical, and the only way it works is by exporting these funny green pieces of paper to the rest of the world and using that to demand the food of Africa, the minerals of Asia, and so forth, because it extends to everything. At a certain point, as
I'm making a face here because maybe some people understand what you're talking about, but I could use a slightly little more, a bit more explanation.
Well, if the U.S. is running a merchandise trade deficit of $700 billion a year, that means $700 billion more in commodities and services are coming in than are going out. In other words, the U.S. exports now virtually nothing and imports everything. And how is this paid for? It's not paid for by earning foreign exchange. It's paid for by printing dollars. Okay. And the dollar overhang is now something like $11 trillion. There are $11 trillion floating around out there in the world. Who is ever going to get anything for those dollars? What happens if people say, we don't want those dollars, they're a wasting asset, they're going down, 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 we want euros, we're dumping the dollar. Dumping the dollar essentially means stopping this entire machine which is attacking the world, proposing to solve its problems with military action. And this is exactly what the war on terror is, a cover story for aggression against people who want to dump the dollar. I'll give you a couple of examples. Saddam Hussein got on the hit list because he dumped the dollar in favor of the euro back in 2000. Kim Il-sung of North Korea, Kim Jong-il, is on the hit list because he did the same thing. And Iran is on the hit list, along with Putin and Russia, because they're talking about proposing and organizing to replace the dollar with the euro. And at that point, once you cut the angle, once you cut the City of London and Wall Street out of the game, they're washed up. They're finished. And again, I think this is not so much a geological question of lack of oil. I think it's a crisis of imperialism. So I would say, what's the problem? The problem is not energy scarcity. The problem is imperialism. And who is the enemy? The enemy is not energy consumption. The enemy is a finance oligarchy in Wall Street and London who have been running the world and who have run it into the ground and who have somehow got to be replaced.
Oh, could it be both? Because I'm still not thinking I understand every single thing you say, but I am getting a sense about if our dollars aren't worth anything, that's just true for all of us. Our buying power goes down, basically, and prices go up, and our buying power goes down.
And that's what
the average person certainly is already probably starting to experience that. And if they go out of the country, it'll be even 1,000 times worse.
Well, if you try to go to Europe with a dollar, you have a handful of flies left over. There's nothing left. See, people point to the fact that the price of oil is going up. Yes, it is going up. The price of housing is going up. The price of orange juice is going up. The price of all commodities are being bid up because hedge funds and Wall Street firms and the big banks refuse to invest in production of any kind, including oil, and they pump all the money into speculative stock markets. Not stock markets, but commodity markets. There are all kinds of books about how there's a commodity boom. Oil is one of the most obvious ones. But these are the symptoms of an imperialist breakdown crisis. This is the death agony of the dollar. And you've got a bunch of people around Bush who propose to solve that through military action. It will never work. So what I'm trying to do is simply state loudly what is going on as a means of trying to stop it, but also to make it clear that the question is not limits to growth or geological questions. It's a question of those people in Wall Street who have been running the world who have got to be deprived of power. And that's the question for every individual citizen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the oil is running out, but that certainly doesn't mean that both of those things can't be true, and maybe you're right altogether. But we have some big issues facing us. There's no question about that. So, Webster Tarpley, I guess you're saying, you know, we change the government, but is there anything else you can say that we can do soon?
I think people have to become political activists. They have to become organizers. They have to realize what's going on, that passivity is now absolutely impossible. I think there were lots of signs of mass mobilization in the 2004 election. I would urge people, don't be demoralized. Keep fighting. Bush is an illegitimate president. He's a usurper. And it's time to build political alternatives, political alternatives also to the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and of course, when you're talking about secret government, which I wish we could have gotten into more here, and fixed elections, it's obviously not just repeating the same things we've been doing.
My book shows we have had one coup per year since 1998, if you count impeachment, stolen elections, war powers, wars, 9/11, and so forth. One coup per year since 1998. In other words, we're back in Weimar Germany, Germany in the 1920s, 1930s, and something like Hitler is clearly on the horizon, so time to organize.
Webster Tarpley, what can you say in one or two sentences about the secret government? I know everyone should get your book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA, and find out more about it. But I'm sure people are, you know, wanting to know at least a sentence or two about this secret government and what it's all about, who's behind it, and for what.
Well, it's a group of CIA old boys, retired generals, people like this, State Department veterans, and essentially attuned to the interests of a financier clique in Wall Street. The main thing that you have to know about this group is it's time to expose it and roll it up. Remember that second-term presidencies have recently been marked by big scandals, Watergate, impeachment, things like Iran-Contra for Reagan. So what I think we need is the Bush administration is sitting on 9/11 as a scandal. It's sitting on the 2004 stolen election. And then you've got Valerie Plame, you've got Chalabi, you've got the forged Niger Yellowcake, you've got the Israeli mole in the Pentagon and AIPAC. It's time to blow up these scandals and try to knock the invisible government back on its heels. I think that's the program for the second Bush administration.
Okay, well, got our work cut out for us. Thank you very much, Webster Griffin Tarpley. Get 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA. Thanks for the interview.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening. If you're interested in hearing other of my programs and looking at my website, go to www.suesupriano.com. Sue Supriano is S-U-E. S-U-P-R-I-A-N-O. And to order copies of my shows or just communicate with me, you can send me an email at sue@suesupriano.com. So the website is suesupriano.com and the email is sue@suesupriano.com. Thanks for listening.